everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you in the driver's seat. And I was going to say riding alongside me, but he's looking at me on the other side of the glass, Tom Fairbanks.
I'm riding shotgun.
There you go. Wednesday, July 10th, 2024. We're midway through what is turning out to be a very challenging weather-wise week here. I'll tell you, Tom, my air conditioning system just, especially the afternoon, it's like nonstop. And that's keeping it at 78 degrees, which is, some people would consider even a little high. But that's kind of the recommended level to keep it at. But I know some people will keep theirs at like 72. So I can imagine the thing must just run day and night.
I run mine at 82.
82.
And at that,
smart.
At that temperature, it cycles. It'll go off and then come back on a few minutes at a time. So,
well, you're a wise man. I don't know if I could handle
it. That's the 82. Reason I'm doing it is I'm hoping to save a little on the electricity.
Yeah, I could probably put it up a degree or two, but 78 seems pretty comfortable for me. We're midway through our 14th year, 13 and a half years now with our radio program from the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio. They have the naming rights to KVOI, the Buckmaster Show Studios. Glad they do. We're part of well, we've got five radio stations now, some of them very highly rated, under one roof here. This one is KVOI, The Voice. We have our worldwide live listening. You listen to the show live at buckmastershow.com or kvoi.com. And we're very proud of the fact that podcast-wise, we've got pretty much every show we have done since January, first week of January 2011, on my website. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, we're going to begin today with Terry Bracey. Normally, we do one 10-minute segment with Terry, but today was so much news to unpack. I made the executive decision, the management decision here on the Buckmaster Show, to do two 10-minute segments with Terry Bracey, whose unique role in representing Tucson's interests began with a 10-year stint on the staff of famed Congressman Morris K. Udall. Terry was then appointed to sub-cabinet position by President Carter and subsequently served under four presidents of both parties. He's the founding partner of the respected public affairs firm Bracey Tucker Brown, which has worked on many of Tucson's successes in the nation's capital. And Terry is also a very popular contributing columnist to the Arizona Daily Star. Terry, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine, Bill. Thank you for saying that I'm popular.
Well, no, you are. And speaking of the Arizona Daily Star, Tony Davis had a really he had a big exclusive with Congressman Grijalva. We knew that Congressman Grijalva was dealing with cancer. Now we know officially what he's been up against. It's lung cancer, and he's undergone treatment, according to Tony Davis in that article. So we certainly are wishing the congressman well. And according to that article, Congressman Grijalva is hoping to get back to the nation's capital in a matter of weeks, but we'll see about that.
Well, I sure hope and pray that that's the case. Raul's been a fighter his whole life. I've known him since we were in our early 20s, and that's a long time ago.
Yeah.
But he's a wonderful guy, and I hope and pray for him.
Yeah, me too. I've known him certainly. I've been in town 36 and a half years, and I think I've known him pretty much since I got off the bus, as they say. Oh, my gosh, Terry Bracey, this story, and it's hard to believe, but it's already about 2 weeks since that debate, the first presidential debate. And Terry, this is a story, as they say, that has legs. It just doesn't want to go away. Some of your thoughts.
Well, first of all, I should tell you that I absolutely adore Joe Biden. I think he's been a world-class president. And I think many of the things that he's achieved were things that would never have happened in a Trump administration. including, as we were recently listening to, medical care. I mean, he expanded the number of Americans who have coverage, and President Trump tried to cut it all off. I could go on and on about that, but you know, with that debate, it can't be unseen. 50 million Americans saw that, and they worried. And maybe they should have worried, and we don't know where this is all going to go. But it kind of broke my heart today. I was reading the New York Times, and I saw an editorial by George Clooney, the actor, who's also a major, major fundraiser for the Democratic Party. And he's very close to Joe Biden. They're very close friends, and he was calling on him to step down. So there's a tremendous amount of pressure there. But, you know, if he were to stay, let's look at that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Okay.
If the president were to stay, what would be the differences between him and Trump? We'll start with women's rights. How about infrastructure? All those people out there working on our projects, highways, airports, it irritates you sometimes, but they're out there rebuilding America. That's Joe Biden. Think about Russia. Trump was Putin's poodle. He let them walk into Crimea without a shot fired. And meanwhile, Joe Biden has reorganized Europe and NATO, and he's broken the back of Russia's army. And just look at climate change, for heaven's sakes. Biden has got the first significant program in America on climate change. And Trump was against climate change, doesn't believe it's real. These are the kinds of differences. They're so vast that you can see that why Democrats are desperate to win this election.
Well, it goes on. You know, you've got the differences with NATO, differences on the Supreme Court, the Russia-Ukraine war, on and on it goes. I mean, there are stark differences, but I'm curious, and I know our listeners are, Terry. You know, as they say, you didn't get off the bus yesterday in this political world. And how in the world do you get back on track with messaging? How do the Democrats turn this thing around?
Well, we'll watch. I think the theory I always learned in politics, if you've made a big mistake or you've had a real problem, what you try to do is stretch it out. Every day that goes by gives you a chance to recover. And I think what the president's strategy is to recover by just waiting this thing out. And, you know, it was 2 weeks ago now, and it's not the day after. 2 weeks from now will be 2 weeks later. People will be thinking about other things, perhaps. But what's gathering in the Congress is something I haven't seen since I was there in 1968. And I admit to that. I was there when people went to Lyndon Johnson, his friends in the Senate, and said, "Mr. President, with this war and your growing unpopularity, we can't win this race. You got to get out." And he did. About this time in the electoral season, LBJ got out, and we nominated Hubert Humphrey. We lost the election. That can be said. But it was a very close election, and Richard Nixon was a major international figure, a former vice president. He wasn't Donald Trump. So I think if Biden stays in, I think we have a chance to win. If Joe Biden gets out, I think we have a long list a very talented bunch of Democratic governors and so on who could fill the bill and be quite exciting.
Yeah, I want to pick up on that after the break about this the folks on the bench. But before we do, it's these mixed signals. Like just today, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said on the Morning Joe show, it's up to the president to decide if he should stay in the race. Well, the president has said so emphatically, I'm not going anywhere. But so you just don't know what to believe, Terry Bracey.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. I can't believe that if the the will of the majority of members of Congress is that the president step aside, that he won't eventually do it. It might be quite painful. He's completely committed to doing the job. He's done a great job. He thinks he can continue to do the job. But a lot of people doubt it. I'm 81 years old. And, I can't do the things I used to do. It's just impossible for me to do them. Mm-hmm. My worst thing is my handicap in golf. It's terrible.
Well, you should.
But you get old. You get old, and, yeah. and people see it. And I have no insight into what the president's in the president's mind. I know he's got a group that's pushing him very hard to continue, but I think that group is less than it was.
Hmm. Hmm. All right. I do want to pick up on where we perhaps will go from here with the Democratic bench. Who are the players? I want to hear you talk about that. But right now, we're going to take a break. First break of the Buckmaster Show. Terry Bracey will stick around for segment number two after this.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is finalizing a new 20-year plan for RTA board review and approval to seek public feedback on the draft plan. Sign up at rtanext.com for updates.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Quality of Life Medical Center has served Tucson residents for more than 20 years. We understand the key to a long, healthy life is not just about getting the right medical treatment, but it's also about feeling good mentally and emotionally. Whether you're looking for preventative care or treatment for a specific condition, we're here for you. And we are accepting new patients for primary care, pain management, and sexual health. Please visit QLMC.com to request an appointment. Quality of Life. Our name says it all.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, midweek edition in a blistering hot week here in Tucson, Arizona. Every year they seem, these week, these excessive heat watches, just, I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm getting older, speaking of age, but it's just harder and harder to take this heat. Anyway, we're going to do two segments with Terry Bracey. One, not enough, in light of all the news that's happening in Washington. And Terry, I want to pick up on the fact that you mentioned there is a very strong Democratic bench of folks who could play a role in the post-Biden years. Who are we talking about? Who are some of the stars?
Well, in the event that the president would decide not to run, my top of my list is Governor Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, who has successfully faced down the MAGA right-wing people in that state. They attempted assassination. They tried to kidnap her. They've tried to do everything they can, and yet she's led the state in a very successful way. She won re-election with 11%, which is unheard of in this state. But she would be number one for me. Secondly, I think Vice President Harris would be logical. Maybe not the most popular at the moment, but she has a lot going for her. People really haven't had a good look at her. She was the Attorney General of the state of California and a very tough cop she was. And so I think there's something to be said about a tough cop running against a felon, huh? That would be one. Another would be Governor Gavin Newsom of California. The guy is, you know, he's sort of out of central casting. He's a good-looking guy, and he's been a mayor of San Francisco and then the governor of California, and a lot of experience. So he's a possibility. The ones, a couple that I like who are in the background, one was Governor Josh Shapiro of Pennsylvania, who's a young guy. He was Attorney General of Pennsylvania, but he's a very popular governor in a very big and important swing state. So he's a possibility. And then you look at maybe the biggest upcoming star after Whitmer is a young governor named Andy Beshear, who continues to win in red states. He's the governor of Kentucky. He's twice elected. He's only 47 years old. He had been the attorney general of the state prior to that, and he is really a terrific talent. And then finally on my list, Roy Cooper, who is he's a southern governor of North Carolina. The only thing going against Roy is he's older now. He's 67. It's not old by these standards, but still, you know, you want to get that youth in there if you can. I have to say that there have been several people who've talked to me about asking me about Senator Mark Kelly. He's got quite a following. Mark does. He does. Yeah. A lot of people like him a lot. So that's just a taste of what's out there. These are very experienced people. They've run big states. They're in crucial swing states. And a lot of people feel that any of those could beat Trump.
Well, this is going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. You've got the Republican convention. I believe it starts next week. There'll be a lot of news out of that. Former President Trump will name his running mate. And then this issue that, as we've talked about, just doesn't seem to want to go away. But the Democrats really do make. Would you agree, Terry, that you've got to have a decision here pretty darn soon?
Oh, yeah, I think so. And I think there will be a decision soon. I don't think this thing will just continue to cook on and on. Either the president will shut this down or he'll have to make a decision. And I'd like to tell you what's going to happen, but I don't know. I don't know. I can't get inside the mind of the president, even though I know him and admire him very much.
How would it work if the president does step aside? You've got all the delegates. He would have, could you kind of run us through a couple of scenarios, please?
Yeah. The prominent suggestions that I've heard, they come down to something like this. There would be maybe four there would be people would announce, and then the powers that be would try to limit the field to those who are rationally in it. And then there would be a series of debates and presentations, probably four of them in different parts of the country. And then those people, based upon that, would try to build their support from the 4,500 delegates going into the convention. This could be the most exciting convention since 1960. This could be a disaster for the Republicans. They are claiming, I mean, it's like that there'll be a lot of chaos and this will be a huge problem for the Democrats. But, you know, politics is funny. There are always surprises in it. Mm-hmm. Remember Barack Hussein Obama?
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
Who was going to elect that guy? The American people did. So I think that if there is an open convention, it could be one of the more remarkable moments in American history.
What, and just to refresh those, 1960, what happened there? Could you kind of go over that?
That was JFK. That was John Kennedy.
Yeah.
He and Lyndon Johnson, who was then my majority leader of the Senate, he and the favorite to win the nomination, he and Lyndon Johnson were pretty much co-equal contenders going into that convention. And Kennedy won it there. Kennedy was able to broker the convention together to give him enough votes. And then in a great surprise, his political enemy, Lyndon Johnson, was named his vice president. Politics is funny, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to circle back. We started our session today talking about your popular columns that you write in the Arizona Daily Star. And you had a recent one about what happens if disaster strikes the presidency. Presidents having medical problems really is not unprecedented. You had, as you point out, the health concerns. You had Dwight Eisenhower, heart attacks. JFK had Addison's disease. And then you had Ronald Reagan with dementia.
Yeah, it happens. We're all human. And as a result of that, the 89th Congress, which was my first, in 1968, passed a law that sent a 25th Amendment to the state, which would allow for a president who was incapacitated to be replaced. And the process is something like this, Bill. A majority of his cabinet would have to recommend that to the Speaker of the House and the President of the Senate that the President be replaced, either temporarily or permanently. And they would have to approve. In that case, the Vice President would become President. Mm-hmm. Now, the President who was incapacitated could regain the presidency quite easily. For example, this has occurred when presidents have gone in for operations or something at Walter Reed Hospital. They'll turn it over temporarily to the vice president and then regain the presidency when they're back. But there is a logical process that has been known to work and can protect the country against having no leadership.
You also point out President Woodrow Wilson suffered a severe stroke. He was bedridden, wasn't he, for the remainder of his second term?
He was. Woodrow Wilson led us to the First World War, and at the end of that, he created this idea of the League of Nations to end all wars, and he encountered opposition to it in the country when he came back, and he got on a train with government officials and the press and everybody else, and went around the country, and about halfway through, he had a terrible stroke.
Oh.
And that stroke, it put him in bed for the remainder of his presidency, and at that time, there was no way to replace him, except if he got out of office. He wouldn't do that. And his wife, Mrs. Wilson, was known as a silent president for 2 years almost.
Mm.
And that's one of the pieces of history that we did not want to repeat.
Absolutely not. All right, Terry, I've got only a few seconds with you, and I won't even ask you to look into your crystal ball. We really, this could go a couple of ways, and we really don't know how it is going to all end, but it's going to end probably soon, right?
I think within 10 days, I would guess.
Okay, good. Always a pleasure. All right. Terry, good information. Some great insight as usual. We very much appreciate your support of our program. Really, since we started 13 and a half years ago, you've been one of our great contributors. I very much appreciate it.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Bill. I'm glad you do what you do.
Thank you very much. Terry Bracey.
Have a good day and stay cool.
Okay, bye. We will try. Terry Bracey with us. With some great insight about all that's going on in Washington. All right, midway point of the midway week show of the Buckmaster program, and we've got Dr. Gabriel Trujillo waiting in the wings, going to talk about education in TUSD right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, the midway point of our midweek edition. And yeah, I've been complaining a bit about the heat, but who wouldn't? I mean, this is just, this week is one that we just keep saying, oh man, you know, it's a long week. Yeah, it has been, but hopefully the summer rains will come back. And we'll get a little cooling, but of course, then you get humidity. But anyway, they are happy over at Green Things because they have had a couple of rains, and they're very happy because people are thinking, you know, I need some plants that will survive the heat, and there are such plants out there, and they can point you and take you to those plants at 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. When you're over there at Green Things, take a look at the wonderful pottery to put your plants in. Great Talavera pottery from Mexico. On and on it goes. Pottery from all over the world. Even the island, the Isle of Crete. Jan and Jack will go to the four corners of the earth to find a beautiful pot for your garden. GreenThingsAZ.com, their sister business, ZocaloVillage.com, in business for 53 years. Dr. Gabriel Trujillo visits with us. We try to get him over here once a month, and he is with me in studio now. Dr. Trujillo, how is your summer going?
Summer has gone well. Had a nice week off for the 4th of July. Was able to spend some time with family, but back in the office, plugged in, we are in back-to-school mode.
Yeah, it's a 24/7 job, and it's certainly a 12-month job, isn't it? A superintendent of a large urban district like Tucson Unified.
It is, and our busy season really is July, mid-June, July. That's when we are looking at all of our facilities, doing all those summer projects. That's where summer hiring is happening, making sure that we're staffed up with our teachers, with our classified staff, transportation readiness, all the servicing that goes on and the maintenance on all of our fleet. So it is a very, very busy time for us here. Then we have all the training and professional development for our principals and our leadership teams. And the time just flies by. I think you and I were just talking before the show. It's already the first day of school, maybe in about 3 weeks.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's coming.
Do you have an all-hands group before the school year starts?
Yeah, we do. We do, usually.
How does that work?
Usually we get everybody together and we talk about—
Team building?
Yeah, we do some team building, and then we talk about the immediate goals of opening up the first day of school and how really the first day of school, it's an event. It's not an operational responsibility or function. It's an actual event. That's the opportunity I have as the district's leader to really make sure that all of our staff members, especially our classified staff, they need to understand that on that first day of school for thousands of parents across the district, it represents a milestone, especially for our kindergarten parents, that's the first time that their babies are stepping into this world of independence, of school, or the first time that their babies are becoming high schoolers at ninth grade, or the emotions that surround a parent who is starting the school year with an 18-year-old who's coming into one of our high schools as a senior, and what that represents, and how that really should be acknowledged, respected, and celebrated when we open up our doors on the first day of school. And that's what that all hands really allows us to do.
And what kind of facilities will these students be entering when they enter the school year in about 3 weeks? This is an upgraded school year when it comes to facilities.
Well, we have the first almost $30 million in bond projects underway and currently
going on right now.
The first 25 schools to get brand new heating and cooling systems, HVAC towers, getting that AC taken care of. So we're very, very happy.
You're getting updates, I guess, every day from these people doing the installation.
Yeah, we're getting updates from the field every day. Yeah, so we're very, very excited. And part of that first wave of projects is also safety and security and new fencing and gating going in, parking lot renovations. All of our first phase projects we expect to have completed by mid-October, starting with the HVAC, the cooling systems that really are vital right now. We're really pushing those vendors hard to get those installations done by the first day of school.
Think about this, and I know you have. When was the last time Tucson Unified had the kind of money to do this kind of work?
We have not won a bond effort in 25 years, so it is the first time that we've been able to successfully secure a victory at the ballot box. So we want to really be diligent about how we use our funds and make sure that we're using them in a very transparent way that resonates with parents and students and families.
Is there someone that is involved with oversight, making sure those funds are going where they should go?
Yeah, we have a bond oversight committee comprised of citizens of the greater Tucson area, and then all of them do reside in the Tucson Unified School District, parents, business people, community members that meet regularly and oversee our spending. We also have a bond manager that we've hired that is sort of our project superintendent that makes sure that she's challenging vendors every step of the way to make sure that they're on time with their projects and that they're giving us the best possible pricing so that we're responsible stewards of the public dollar.
And, you know, people don't think about this, Dr. Trujillo, but when you have that kind of money that is being put into our tradespeople, that's good money, and that's going to help a lot of families right now.
It is, and we've been very proud to really really prioritize.
Try to stay local.
Vendors and service providers that are local and that are putting local people to work. And so we really firmly believe that wherever we can pump these bond dollars back into the local economy and have local jobs available for local community members, that's what we really want to do.
So how do you get the kids to school? And the obvious answer my own question, school buses. And over the years, there's been issues with getting enough drivers. What does your transportation team, what are they saying?
We are in amazing shape right now. And it's a testament to this governing board that stepped out a couple of years ago and approved a historic pay raise for our bus drivers and bringing them to $18.35 an hour. And really investing in their training and funding a commercial driver's license training program where you can just join us off the street and we will actually train you and put you in classes to get your commercial driver's license. So that's resulted in almost 200 drivers now in our ranks. A few years ago, we were at 146. Mm. And we're very excited about this school year because now with almost 200 drivers, a lot of those local bus stops that were right across the street from a parent's house or down the street from a family's house, they're starting to come back. The more drivers you have, the more bus stops that you can offer, the more bus stops that you can offer, the more routes that you offer. And of course, the more routes you offer, the shorter the time that it is that students have to sit on a bus. So we're very, very excited about that. The new fleet of vehicles that we've been able to secure largely through COVID era dollars.
These are new school buses?
New school buses.
Those aren't cheap.
Those aren't cheap, but thankfully a lot of the COVID era ESSER dollars we were able to use for the purchase of new buses that did not have any air condition.
Oh my goodness.
And now we have a pretty new and modernized fleet that students will be riding on. So this school year actually represents the inaugural school year for a lot of these brand new buses that will be hitting the road for the first time.
You mean some of these buses didn't have air conditioning?
Some of the older ones that have been replaced had either really faulty air conditioning or no air conditioning. So we're very excited to have a fully modernized fleet now.
Well, the drivers must be very happy about getting behind the wheel of a brand new Bluebird or whatever those are. There's a certain manufacturer. I know I've seen those on the school buses, but they must be happy to get behind the wheel of a new bus.
It's an incentive to come work in TUSD when you can be behind the wheel of a new modernized bus.
And the enrollment is just so critical. What do you think when all is said and done and you get the head count? Where are we going to be here in about 3 weeks?
Well, I think what we've done differently with enrollment this year is we have been more comprehensive in our outreach with three distinct groups of TUSD families. For the first time, really strategic engagement with TUSD families that have left us over the last couple of years.
Oh, you're talking to the parents. Why did you leave? And do you want to come back?
And are you willing to come back?
Yeah.
What is it that we can do better? What are you looking for? We've had a tremendous response to that outreach where we've got a couple of hundred families that are now engaging us in a conversation about what it would take for them to be back in the district. And a lot of it has to do with school safety, transportation, a better, faster ride to school, more program options at the secondary level, better access to extracurriculars. So we're very, very excited about engaging these families that have left us. And then also getting out there and recruiting new students that have moved into our boundaries that have never been in a TUSD school. And students that are currently accepting these vouchers to attend private schools and these tuition charging elite charter schools. Mm. We've never taken a run at them. We are this year. And we are being very, very assertive with our marketing efforts and our recruitment efforts of why would you want to pay all of these dollars to this private school when we have award-winning and renowned AP courses available for you at University High School, at Pueblo, at Tucson High? Did you know about these programs? Are you interested? So our philosophy is not just to lay down and get run over by the ESSA train. But we've got to fight back, and we've got to tell our story, and we've got to reach out to these families. We can't just write them off and assume that, okay, there's been this expansion of these empowerment scholarship accounts. Let's just let these families go. No, absolutely not. We've got great programs, great opportunities, and we're really aggressively going after these families to try to get them into our doors. And then, of course, we're engaging our current families to make sure that they're aware of the opportunities at the next grade level, especially those that are moving on from fifth grade to middle school or from middle school to high school. So, so far, so good. Enrollment does look healthy, healthier than at this point last year, but we have a long way to go, Bill. I mean, the peak enrollment season is right here over the next 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. What was the peak of the enrollment over the last few years? Where were you at?
Over the last few years, so at this time last year, we were a shade under 38,000 total students for, you know, K-12. Mm-hmm. And right now we're close to 39,000. So the enrollment is up a little bit right now. We certainly don't want to rest on our laurels. We want to certainly drive to 40,000 as much as we can. Mm-hmm. We are looking at kindergarten right now as a little bit of a concern. Our kindergarten enrollment is a little bit down. However, kindergarten families do tend to take their time selecting where their kids are going to go to kindergarten, and we usually will see a late surge the last couple of weeks of July.
All right, Dr. Gabriel Trujillo sticks around. Another segment with him, still more questions as school begins in about 3 weeks in the second largest school district in the state of Arizona. That's still the fact, isn't it, Dr. Trujillo? You're number two?
Close to it. We're number three.
Behind Phoenix
Chandler.
Union. And now Chandler?
It's Mesa Schools.
Oh,
Chandler.
Mesa is number one.
And then
Chandler.
And then TUSD.
And then what about Phoenix Union?
Phoenix Union is actually, I would say, seventh or eighth.
They're dropping.
27,000 students, so they're significantly behind us.
All right, we'll take a break right here, back after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Quality of Life Research Center has conducted more than 100 clinical trials in Arizona over its 20-year history. Because of their success, participants may have access to a variety of treatments under study that may not be available to people outside the trial. And participants may receive compensation for study-related time and travel. If you think you'd like to participate in a clinical trial, please visit QLMC.com to view our open trials and express interest.
Pima Association of Governments, the Greater Tucson Region's metropolitan planning organization, is developing a new long-range transportation plan for the next 30 years. Shape your transportation future and tell us your transportation project and funding priorities. Take the survey at pagregion.com/2055. That's pagregion.com/2055.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Boy, this is an easy sell talking about Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. It's an easy sell normally, but it's especially so when we're pushing 110 to 112 degrees. And then I look at the temperature over in Silver City, 84 degrees at midday over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. So it would be the perfect time of year to make that three-hour drive over to Silver City and enjoy some cool air and a nice weekend getaway. Their website, goodstartingplacesouthwestnewmexico.org. We continue now with our summer edition of Dr. Gabriel Trujillo and a preschool year edition. School will begin in about 3 weeks at Tucson Unified, and Dr. Trujillo has been going over the checklist of so much that has to be done. Of course, we've got to make sure the teacher core is ready to go, and hopefully there will be a lot of permanent teachers, not as many, nothing against the substitutes. We need them very much so, but there's nothing like a permanent teacher in that classroom.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we've been really good at over the last 3 years has been filling vacancies. But now it's the next chapter. Now it's not just filling vacancies, but it's also now about teacher efficacy and effectiveness. Because though we've been filling vacancies, what we've seen is an increase in less experienced teachers coming outside of the field of education through alternative certification programs. We're seeing less of the traditional College of Education graduates that are more well-versed in instructional pedagogy, especially in teaching reading and math. And we're seeing a lot more second career folk come in. And it's good because their heart's in the right place and they're filling the vacancy. However, there's the whole pedagogy and the whole expertise that you have to provide them in how to teach reading and how to build literacy skills.
The whole
skills.
Culture, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's our next really monumental challenge, is how to create high-quality job-embedded professional development that's differentiated and supportive of teachers individually where they're at in their journey. Mm-hmm. We certainly have master teachers. We don't have enough of them, but we have some exemplary teachers. And we're always looking at where can we plug them in so that they can assume positions of leadership and teaching and modeling effective instruction for some of our newer teachers.
School year 23-24 did find an improvement in academics.
It did. And we're still awaiting the results of student performance for the assessments that were taken a few months ago. But our school letter grades and our growth that we saw for this year, which were representative of 22-23 performance, saw some really great growth for students coming in after COVID. But what we also know about school accountability and the state assessments is, yes, it's good to have kids showing improvement and moving from, say, minimally proficient on the state exam to partially proficient. But ultimately, we want to hold ourselves accountable for proficiency for kids working at grade level and kids passing these exams. And that is also a monumental challenge because the majority of students in our district are off grade level and tend to come to us off grade level with regard to reading, writing, and math. So our teachers do an absolutely phenomenal job during the day and after the day with tutoring efforts and beyond the classroom instructional time efforts in providing tutorial support. So we're always challenging ourselves as a system to make sure that we are jam-packing each instructional day with high-quality teaching and learning for our kids.
The electronic devices is a huge issue in your business. Some school districts have decided they have different protocols with the devices. They're put away when the students arrive on campus. Where are you on that issue?
I am totally for banning these devices. These devices are disruptive. I believe that they take away from a student's ability to focus, but I'm flexible. I believe that students should and could have access to their devices during periods of the day that are non-instructional, like lunch, like maybe breaks, and students want to stream something from YouTube. I'm okay with that, but I'm very supportive of teachers having the authority to be able to collect devices at the beginning of each instructional period.
Mm-hmm. Where would they, how would that work logistically? How does that work?
We are piloting at Sabino High School. I want to compliment the principal out there, Mr. Kevin Amadon, who worked with this community. He got parent support. Mm-hmm. The parents are solidly behind him. The teachers are solidly behind him. And they're piloting this year device lock boxes. They're transparent. They're clear.
Interesting.
And so students will be able to see their devices at the front of the room. They're kind of like mini lockers. The students will walk in. They will put their devices in the device storage containers. They'll have numbers. And the students will put their ID in the slot of the box so they know which one is theirs. And their devices will be returned to them at the end of each instructional period. So we are certainly watching Sabino to see how successful this pilot may be before considering other high schools. We also know that we want to work with our parents on this issue.
Yeah, because some parents see it as a security thing,
don't they?
They feel more secure if the student has the device.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And as a parent myself, I understand that. But however, we also have a large amount of parents that are also frustrated with these devices. And they fight the same battle at home that we're fighting here. And they're lining up behind us. So we're certainly looking at Sabino, and hopefully that could be a model of what could come, especially in middle school and high school.
No, I'm glad I brought that up. I did not know about this model program at Sabino. So that's why we do this program every day, is I try to learn something every day. I'm a lifelong learner, Dr. Trujillo.
and one of the things that, you know, when you were in the classroom and when I was in the classroom, the absence of these devices allowed us to focus. It allowed us to truly connect interpersonally with our teachers and our fellow classmates and really establish authentic relationships.
Yes.
And when you have a bunch of students addicted to their screens and their faces and their phones, it really does inhibit that interpersonal connection that school is supposed to bring to students.
Yep, it is an addiction. All right, Dr. Trujillo, good luck. We'll try to bring you back in early August, okay?
Well, thank you, Bill. Stay out of the heat.
All right. Hope everybody has a great day. Bill Buckmaster signing off, saying, have a great day.